Great. Hi, everybody. Happy holidays. Good morning. Welcome to the Zen Center. Anybody new for the first time today? Oh my gosh! Look at all of you, brand new. Right before, are you just changing your religion right before?
Just kidding.
I mean, I really do believe that at the heart of all the great traditions is there's a different set of ways of thinking about it, so the texts and the sacred study is different and the practices are somewhat different, but I'm thinking that somewhere at the heart of all the traditions they're taking us to the same place. Wouldn't you think?
Mm-hmm. All climbing the same mountain. It's different.
Yeah, paths. We're climbing the same mountain, different paths. Yeah, thank you. So for those of you who are new, just out of curiosity, what brought you? Do you mind?
I just looked up on a meetup last night, was looking for some place spiritual, and I don't know, I was thinking to come some try meditation, and by myself it wasn't working so good, so I want to learn.
Okay, it is. Well, it's kind of hard to learn anything you want to do well in a vacuum. Usually we need a context and a coach and all those kinds of things, so welcome. Thanks for coming.
Welcome. Yeah.
Anybody else who's new? What brought you?
Thank you so much. So I'm not very good in English, sorry, but I spent like 7 years meditating.
Okay.
Usually at home, and I just want to look what's going on.
Okay,
here.
Great. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming down.
Yeah.
You guys sound a little bit similar in terms of you practiced on your own and reached a limit of what you feel you can do. So, you're from Russia?
Yeah.
Yeah, where are you from?
Ukraine.
Yeah, that is sort of. Yeah, we haven't had a Ukrainian here before or a Russian, so it's quite a day. Thanks for being here.
Welcome, Eastern Bloc.
Yeah. Good. All right, others who are here for the first time, quite a few, I'm surprised. Who else is here? Yeah, what brought you? Great. Well, for whatever reason, then, that tends to want to take me a little bit maybe into sitting first this morning. Sometimes we have a discussion first, depending on what's happening, but I think maybe starting with meditation and then taking it from there. All right, so let's go ahead and sit. So I'll talk somewhat generally about meditation. Mother Teresa, you guys know, great Christian saint, she said that when she meditates, she listens to God, and when she prays, she talks to God. I think from a Buddhist perspective, because the practice is non-theistic, you could say that when we meditate, we quiet the mind, the body, speech, and mind become one, and we recognize our oneness with all things. So a slightly different emphasis, but similar practice. Makes sense? Okay, so just notice, you can notice in the room already, you can feel as people start to come to the cushion, there's a general sort of settling of the energy in the room. Can you feel that? And a kind of quieting, you can feel people's cognition quiet. So when we begin, it's important to remember that sitting meditation is a physical activity, and it requires a very strong and in a way, you could say conditioned body, that you have to condition your body to sit longer periods of time and to sit well. And the important thing is that the base of your body from the waist down, your abdomen, the long bones of your body, and this triangle if you're sitting on the ground, is really the stability of the posture. So the stability comes from the relationship of the pelvis to the knees, this triangle. And the energetic vitality in the posture comes from your abdomen. So basically what I'd like you to do is bring your attention below your waist, connect to your sits bones, and by moving side to side, back and forth on your sits bones, really feeling gravity where you connect to the cushion, and then rotating around on your pelvis and activating your abdomen so that your attention is now in the base of your body. And for a moment, as you do that, if you're sitting on a chair, your feet are flat on the floor, and otherwise it's the same. Sits bones, activated abdomen. wakefulness and energy in the base of your body. And if you can, just experience yourself enjoying feeling your vitality. Can you enjoy and actually experience pleasure in the energy of your body? There's something very direct and important about feeling ourselves as living beings, that the energy of life is coursing through us. And now that you're connected to the ground and to the base of the body, I'd like you to feel, if you will, the length of your spine lifting upwards from your tailbone, through your abdomen and solar plexus, through the heart center. And as you experience your spine through the heart center, let your chest and your heart lift a little bit. We tend to collapse around the heart. Through the neck, the base of the skull, through the top of the skull, and out the top about 6 to 8 inches. So there's the sense that you're also moving upward even as you are sinking down. I like to then experience, again, vitality, if you will, kind of bigger than my body. So imagine the heat coming off your body and the kind of radiant quality of heat that you might be surrounded by. So that you're sitting a little bit bigger than just your gross physical form. And in between my verbal instruction is an opportunity for you to feel the stillness in the room, silence, as well as whatever small sounds might be occurring or small movements. And also just feel, if you will, spaciousness in all directions. Above you, below you, behind you, in front of you, 360 degrees of space, and most importantly, inside of you. Maybe not most importantly, but as importantly, feel spaciousness inside of you. Stillness, silence, and spaciousness. One of the reasons why you're drawn to sit in a group as opposed to continuing to sit alone is that as we settle the mind and open our awareness, we start to experience how awareness is actually exists within, around, and between us. And we're supported by the awareness of everyone in the room. It's not simply a private enterprise, in fact, quite the opposite. Now bring your attention to the back of the neck and your jaw, and make sure that you loosen your jaw and neck. We often unconsciously clench. It's the strongest muscle in the body. So deliberately relax any tension in your jaw. Your lips are together, your teeth are apart, and your tongue is resting on your upper palate. Relax behind your eyes. And as you relax behind your eyes, feel your whole body relax. And you may have thought, memory, images, language. As thought and cognition arises, simply allow it to liberate without being heavy-handed. Thought arises and thought dissolves very naturally if we don't focus on it too much. Become aware of your breathing. Remembering as you do that the body is dense and that the breath itself mediates the density of the body and the very spacious, etheric quality of mind. So you can become a little bit lighter. And again, enjoy the rhythm of the inhale and the exhale. without changing or manipulating the breath. Just allow the exhale to be somewhat longer than the inhale. And feel again the sensation of relaxation as you exhale. Meditation is always the perfect combination of presence, uprightness, mixed fully with relaxation. Bring your attention as you breathe and sit still to the space of your mind. And imagine for a moment that your mind is the sky, and that the thought and language, activity, is like the weather. It's moving through this very vast open space, again, not contained on the inside or the outside, but all pervasive. So sitting still, breathing, allowing thought to dissolve, just identify with this vastness. And as thought arises, just watch yourself identify and take a step back, identifying as awareness rather than as cognition. Okay, thanks, Cindy. So I'm just curious, how many of you actually were raised or brought up in some kind of Christian tradition? Okay. And anybody raised in traditionally at home, but in a different tradition than the Christian, like the Jewish tradition? Anybody? Yes. Jewish? Jewish-ish. So what I thought might be an interesting way to begin is I would be curious if you wouldn't mind, in just a small group, talk a little bit about whether or not there was some sort of religious training that you had as a child, and kind of what the two or three main things you feel you learned from that were. I'm assuming that nobody here was brought up in a Buddhist home. Is that fair? Anybody? Okay. So, if you weren't, you might sort of think, well, what was it like to grow up in a secular home or in a household that in a certain way wasn't cultivating any religious practice? And did I receive any teachings related to ethics or my conduct? Or, you know, what was the guidance that I received in a secular home? What was valued, you might say, in a secular upbringing? So we're just doing this because it's going to, you know, we're in the middle of the holiday season, so. And I'll build on this in just a moment. So in groups of two or three or four, if it's easy, just share that. And then what are the things you actually feel like you learned that you still carry with you? Okay, I'll give you about 10 minutes.
Hey, you should thank your partners for listening to you. Thank your partners for listening. It might be the only time you get listened to during the whole holidays. So I am curious what you talked about. What did you... What did you talk about? I'd love to hear. Do I have a microphone? I'm just curious about one. Lucia's got one. What are some of the things that you identified? Tom, let's start with you. You're right there. I know you were brought up in a religious household. What did you learn?
We were talking in our group. I actually had the good fortune of falling in with Genpo Roshi and his cohort when I was still a teenager. And, you know, I remember my first, like, day
of... He's my Zen teacher, everybody.
Genpo. Yeah, Genpo. I really have a lot of love for Genpo and from him.
Yes.
I remember, like, my first day, like, in retreat with Genpo and him speaking to Big Heart. Mm. And I just felt this massive presence of a boundless love. Mm. And as I got older into my Zen practice, I kind of looked back on a church I had left behind and thought, oh, this Big Heart... It was a lot like what we talk about as the Sacred Heart of Christ. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Good, thank you. Excellent. Yes, please. Is it Michelle?
Yeah. The Buddhists actually considered Jesus to be a bodhisattva.
A bodhisattva, yeah. He was a great teacher. Great teacher of enlightenment. Good. What else? What else did you learn or come away with in your religious training? And then we'll hear from those of you who are, have secular backgrounds. What about you, Todd?
I was raised a skier.
You're raised a skier. Yes.
And growing up,
it's a religion for sure. Yeah.
Growing up in Salt Lake, none of my friends could ski on Sunday, so we would joke that skiing was our church.
Yes.
And it's interesting how that has continued to shape me, and how much more important it continues to be.
And so, what is it? Is it the athleticism of skiing? Is it being in nature? What is it?
Yes, both. It's the athleticism in nature that facilitates the connection and the power.
Yeah, and you still do it a lot, and it means something to you. Beautiful. Thank you. What else? Yes, please, right behind you.
I grew up LDS, and one of the things that I really value about the religion and the values that they taught that I love was the service of it and the taking care of each other, even those like outside of the LDS community. And it's something I kind of miss about being part of that religion, is that it was so readily available and such an important part of it.
Okay. There might be a couple of people in the room that don't know what LDS is. Is there anybody who doesn't know that, what that is? I guess in Salt Lake, everybody. Is that fair? Okay, good.
I grew up a Mormon.
We're not allowed to call us that anymore, though.
That's right. That's what I understand. How many people grew up LDS or in the Mormon church in the room? Quite a few of you, yeah. And what is it about you? Do you mind sharing why you transitioned out of that practice?
Yeah. So the idea there is that you're supposed to find your own testimony, which is something else we talked about that we liked about the faith, is that it did have a personal aspect. And so the idea is you're supposed to pray to God and receive an answer in your own heart. And if you receive the answer, then you know that that church is the true faith. And if you don't receive an answer, then you're supposed to pray again. And you're supposed to pray again. And I eventually came around to a point where I thought, I think this is the answer, that there's not an answer there. And that was kind of it. I walked away a pretty clean break at that point. It was that, and also the
That's fair.
The laying on of hands and the blessing always had a really bad energy to me, and that it was the combination of those things.
I see. Okay, good. But it sounds like one of the things that you miss is that, well, you like the personal domain, that actually the practice, the religion, the teaching relates to you as an individual, unique person in the world.
And the the personal responsibility of having your own
testimony.
Yes, and your own like faith and learning within it.
Yeah, and I would say the similarity of testimony to the Buddhist tradition is that in the Buddhist tradition, everything is based on your own experience. In other words, the Buddha himself said, don't take anything I say on face value. It's not a faith-based orientation. It's very much based on first-hand experience of the teachings and how they work and what the impact of meditation practice and discipline is on your life. So I think there's a similarity there. And then also this idea of obviously, what's the point really of any spiritual or ethical training if we don't in some way include others? So you said the other thing that you really appreciated was the role of the community in service, even to those who don't necessarily belong in the community. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Awesome. Thank you. How about in Ukraine? Did you have a...
Well, I'm someone of American to represent our conversation.
Please.
Yeah, it was really interesting to talk with our group and to learn how many people going from the Mormon. And it's really like a different world here in the Salt Lake. So it was interesting to listen that people can escape and open their minds and live a different life, even like, and We spoke also that the family still can appreciate their choice, even if they left the religion.
Mm-hmm.
They still can talk to the family, and I think it's really important that there is no like contradiction,
mm-hmm.
there is no fight, it's just free choice
yeah.
and respect.
Very good, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an accomplishment when you can make that transition and still be included in your family and still respected for your choice. I agree, absolutely. And I would say that I, for me, that what I see the Mormon faith, the LDS faith do really, really well, which I think all traditional religious faiths do well, which is to provide stability, to provide predictability, to provide ethical training, and to give people a sense, a very powerful sense of belonging, right? And that's really, really supportive to many of us. And that can continue to be supportive. It isn't necessarily an either or, but sometimes what happens in traditional contexts is that there's a kind of, in order to create that level of stability and belonging, you almost necessarily have to have an us and them mentality.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Because if you don't have a strong us and them mentality, then you don't know what's outside of what you're doing traditionally. So you find that in most very traditional religions, us and them is also a big part of it. So there's us and there's everyone outside of that. So the boundary isn't fluid. And so when people come to a point in their lives where they want to ask different questions, or they want to experience different things, or they want to explore other ways of being, it's not tolerated very much. And sometimes there's certain kinds of hypocrisy that might arise around, let's say, same-sex orientation or other things. Maybe there's traces of racism. Those things come up and they cause ethical dilemmas in people. And so lots of times it's just necessary for people to move on. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to negate the value of the tradition. And so I agree with you. I think it's amazing when people can do it and still there's a lot of mutual respect.
Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was the main idea in our conversation. So.
Great. Thank you. Good. Hey, Mike Zimmerman, you had seven straight years of Sunday school attendance in the Presbyterian Church. What did you take away?
You know, what was my takeaway?
Yeah.
My mother was a superintendent.
But you loved to sing, didn't you?
I did. My mother and I used to sing in choirs all the time. That was, yeah, I was coming down here this morning listening to Crash Test Dummies Christmas. And singing along, you know, with all the Christmas carols and singing the harmonies, and yeah. So I mean, I were.
How many of you sang in church?
I guess all of you did.
if you went.
If you went to the Mormon church, you sang. And do you miss singing?
Yes.
I bet you do. Okay. Anyway, keep going.
So yeah, I remember the singing. I remember. You know, you just had to go to church, so you hung out with the kids at church. And when I was raised in Illinois, and we lived out in small towns and out in the country, and you know, the church group would go down to Cedar Robe in downtown Chicago or whatever, the Moses or something, you know. But I didn't break away from it as so much as simply find the. I mean, the ethical teachings were important. I was a Presbyterian, so it's very Calvinist, very, you know.
You meaning work ethic?
Yeah, very mainline American. It was, you know, one of
practical?
The,
like, what do you mean by Calvinist, for those of us that don't know Calvinist?
Good works, you know.
Do good things.
Well, no, in the sense that you manifest your... I mean, I guess theoretically you manifest your goodness by working hard, and I mean, just very Protestant. And it's Scottish also. I mean, it's Calvin and it's John Knox and kind of rigorous.
Do you guys know what he means? Who doesn't? Few of us don't.
Calvinism, you know, is you're saved by works. You're saved by what you do. You're not saved by somebody laying on of hands. you say, by getting out there and chopping wood and, you know, building things and
so this
being
is
a, straightforward and...
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so it's a, it has a big ethical, implicit ethical component to
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so fair enough. I mean, I think it's important for us to actually consider this question of what do we see, what have we received from our upbringing, what things still matter and are important to us, and then also what is it that the Zen tradition or that the Buddhist tradition does that might be different. And I would say one of the things that the Buddhist tradition maybe offers, and I'd be interested to hear your perspective, is that as you deepen into meditation practice and the body, speech, and mind are quiet, they become coherent, the heart naturally opens, one becomes somewhat, you might say, harmonized with the environment, that the whole idea of saved and being saved, this dualistic notion that you're saved or not saved, disappears. There's a sense that you simply are. And that in that isness is the legitimacy of your life. It's not something that you have to do. It's not something you have to become. It's not something that you have to earn. It's something that you are by the very fact of your being. And this is a really important distinction. And further, that as you deepen into this recognition of, you could say, your innate worth, if you will, if you want to put it that way, that as you recognize this worthiness that's innate to being, that is beyond your concepts of good and bad and right and wrong and what's successful and what isn't, that out of that recognition, out of that very understanding, one also finds they want to contribute. One also wants to be in connection with nature. One also develops something like a testimony. In other words, those things are not excluded, but they come from a different place. They come from this recognition of being rather than a dualistic idea of who you need to become. Do you buy that difference?
Yes.
Does that make sense to you? It was something that I kind of wanted to talk about today a little bit, because in a way you could say that the logic is the reverse, in the sense that you know, well, it's
you're
getting complicated,
worthy.
But what?
You're already worthy.
You're already worthy, but you don't know it. And unless you have a practice that allows you to really see it, you're seduced by all the beliefs you have about who it is you think you need to be, and you're constantly in relationship with all your thoughts about yourself and your life and what has meaning. And so what becomes really important is the discipline of turning down, literally, the cognitive mind, and turning up the experience of one's beingness, and as Tom pointed out, one's natural open heart, which is something that you are is who you are, not something you have to get. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Are there other things that you want to share about your upbringing? Or yeah, please. Yeah.
So raised in the LDS religion until about 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. When my parents got divorced, my mom decided she was a Unitarian. My sister decided that she was a pagan witch. And my brother went on a mission. And I stopped going to church.
Welcome to America.
And then fast forward about 6-7 more years, and my sister fell in love with an Israeli and started practicing and became a Jew.
Uh-huh.
At that time, that's when my mom transitioned to Buddhism and my uncle. So really, I really relate to what Tom said and what you just said. It was so beautiful. It's what I really learned from my family, even though the stability wasn't necessarily there. It was very chaotic.
It was very dynamic.
Very dynamic. Is this really my family? There was no, like, this is right, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. You must do it this way. It's all is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Each is a path, and each path is okay.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Beautiful. Nice. Blessings to your family. Max, what do you have to say on this topic? I'd be curious to hear from you, since you're in town.
So we also talked about family. And I think that's kind of the critical, that's the petri dish, where you kind of absorb and are tested by these different kind of ethical teachings and the rights and the wrongs and things. And my dad passed away almost a year ago. And he, on the exterior, appeared to be a very conventional, white old Mormon dude, but on the inside had this deep, vibrant vein of kind of anarchic criticism. And so one of his favorite things to do when talking about upbringing in a religion was to quote a poem. And the poem goes, "They fuck you up, your mom and dad. They do not mean to, but they do. They fill you with the faults they have and add some extra just for you." But they were fucked up in their turn by fools in old style hats and coats who half the time were soppy stern and half at one another's throats.
We have a two-time rule on poems. You can do it faster if you want to, but you have to do it twice.
You have to do it twice?
Yep. Two times.
Yep. No? Okay.
Yeah.
"They fuck you up, your mom and dad. They do not mean to, but they do. They fill you with the faults they had and add some extra just for you. But they were fucked up in their turn by fools in old-style hats and coats who half the time were soppy stern and half at one another's throats." And so the thing that taught me, hearing that from my father's mouth and then us kind of sharing that amongst ourselves and kind of ironic, you know,
yeah,
isn't it weird, and just a little bit of empathy, you know, that the people who raised us were guided by their narratives and guided by their stories and perhaps could not see the level to which they were perhaps trapped by them. Maybe in difficult or even toxic ways, that I've got my own set of narratives, my own set of stories, and my own child that I'm eventually going to fuck up as well. And so just offer...
Eventually, it's
a fait accompli, it's done. But yeah, just kind of offering a bit of that appreciation and forgiveness and that's really hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, appreciation and forgiveness, mercy. Absolutely. Yeah, by the way, I feel like I have to say something since you guys are visiting. Americans applaud a lot. Do you know that? Have you gotten used to that we clap all the time for things? Let's give it up for Max one more time. That's great. Great.
Audible celebration.
Okay, so Isabella, are you ready?
Oh, okay.
Okay, so she's going to play for us. Isabella is a beautiful violin player, and we thought since it's the holiday that she would... And are you going to lead us in a hymn, Isabella?
Well, yeah, I thought you were going to do the words.
Was I supposed to do the words? All right, if you know the words, then you can sing it, and if you don't, I was supposed to make the words so you can sing it, and I didn't do my part. But I think there's probably enough people.
Yeah, you think just do one word?
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
I just need a minute.
Okay, you just need a minute. Okay, great. Zach, do you want to say something while we're waiting for Isabella?
Not really. I'm feeling pretty emotional today. I'm going to visit family next week, and this is a big topic for me.
Can I just share what we were talking about?
It's coming up anyway.
Well, one of the things I found interesting is we talked about the power of guilt. Yeah, in this whole religion and ethics, and about just what that does. You know, when you're feeling like, you know, you can never live up to what you're supposed to be sometimes. Mm-hmm. Even if you're happy and you're a good person, mm-hmm. it's still like there's this guilt that you've disappointed mm-hmm. the people who have taken a different path.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Which is why I think in our practice that we do a lot of work to surrender, to really both look at cognition extremely directly, and then to, as I said before, turn down the volume on the cognitive mind, turn the volume up on being itself, and trust what is disclosed when our being becomes more powerful. And that a lot of the kinds of ideas that we have actually get in our way at a certain point. And so it's important to be able to see them clearly and know when they serve and when they don't. And that's really at the heart of our practice, you might say. So from that perspective, the other way you can think about it is one of the true shortcomings of of our cognitive analytic thinking mind is that it always thinks in terms of pairs. It's dualistic. In other words, there's this and that. There's you, there's me, there's up, there's down, there's good, there's bad, there's right, there's wrong. And that within the context of dualism, that we're always siding with experience. We're for certain parts of our experience, we're against other parts of our experience. But again, when we turn down dualism and we come into wholeness, we see a kind of intelligence that relates to the world in a much more compassionate and inclusive way that isn't based so much on these really hard and fast lines of good and bad, right and wrong. Does that make sense? So for instance, when I talked to you a lot about having my son who was born with a disability, he was born when I was 30, and I had spent 6 years in a lot of intensive meditation practice, and I was so grateful that I had had that those years of practice, because when he was born with Down syndrome, my dualistic mind didn't take over. In other words, I was sort of able to remain in relationship to this new baby. I could see clearly that the future would hold challenges that I didn't quite know what they were, but that I could deal with them. And I could dial back all that future and be in relationship to him. And that's been true kind of all the way through his life. Is staying very close and immediate to what's true is so much more manageable than what arises in the mind. Right? And that's why it's so important for us to discipline our mind. And I saw Willie yesterday, and he's in the middle, he's 30, and he's in the middle of not pleasing me at all, ever. and I'm having a party today for his cousins, you know, so my nieces and nephews, my sister and I are having a party, and Willie's not coming. And I'm really mad about it. I want my son to come to the party that I'm throwing, and he won't come. And I said, well, I want to understand why you're not coming. Are you not coming because you have Down syndrome, you're different? No, Diane, that's not it. Are you not coming because they don't let you talk enough? No, Diane, that's not it. Okay, well, then why aren't you coming? Revenge. I said, what do you mean revenge? He goes, revenge. So it turns out he's mad at his other cousin because she was, I was paying her to take him bowling and to the trampoline park and stuff, and she moved. And when she moved, apparently he got mad and he's not going to forgive her. Revenge. So I said to my friend, I said, will you give Willie a lesson on forgiveness? Because it's Christmas, he needs to forgive. And so my friend said to him, you need to forgive Willie because forgiveness, which is one of the values we learn in our religious upbringing, forgiveness is just better. You feel better when you forgive. And Willie said, who made you Dr. Phil? So that was the end of that. I did my best. I tried. So I'm making peace with Willie not pleasing me now. So. All right, you ready, Isabella? Here we go.
Thank you. away in the major. I asked Diane what, when she asked me to do this last week, I asked her what her favorite carol is. It's this one. So I'll sing, I'll play one verse, then we can sing.
That the difference between the violin and the fiddle is how it's played. Did you know that?
Nope.
Okay, anything else for today that you want to think about or cover? Anybody going to struggle with family? All the hands go up. There's like a huge hands going up. The biggest tip I can give you is when you notice the struggle is to become very intimate with your own body and mind. And notice the way in which adrenaline and cortisol and all the stress hormones are flowing. And use your breath. And use your spaciousness and your relaxation to calm yourself. Because everything that's happening is probably fine. It just doesn't feel okay. And you have really, really strong preferences about how you want things to be. And things are as they are. So it's just really nice to let things be as they are and to give everybody that merciful kind of permission to be themselves. And in doing so, give yourself permission to be yourself and just calm yourself. That's the best thing, honestly. That helped Zach a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right, anything else that you want to visit? Thank you so much.